So like a lot of recovery is about you kill the ego and destroy the ego. But to me, that's an unrealistic aspiration, because what will happen? Your ego will just reinvent itself, yeah. right? And so having the symbiotic relationship with our ego is a much healthier way. And so there's a level of acceptance that, yeah, my ego is going to, from time to time, be prickly. It's going to take the reins. It's going to try to get control. And from time to time, I'm going to have to reorient this mm-hmm. and remind the ego that, hey, I love you. Thanks. Mm-hmm. You know, but we don't do that no more. We don't need to operate like that.
Welcome to the Most High Show, a show about recovery, spirituality, and all that. Produced, posted, and hosted by people in recovery who have strength and hope and want to share it with you. If you or someone you love is suffering, we want you to know you are not alone. This is the Most High Show.
Welcome to the Most High Show, made by and for people in recovery, a show about recovery, spirituality, and being
human.
Our mission is to provide impactful, community-driven media that informs, empowers, and inspires positive change. Real people, real stories, real life. This is the Most High Show. We have, I think Katie's on the ones and twos, Sarah's on the ones and twos, Kim is doing producing. We have an in-studio audience. I don't know who's doing quality control, but I'm sure somebody is. And tonight is Sarah and I are going to be co-hosting the show together. I think this is the first time we've done just the two of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've always had.
And you know, the reason why we're doing this is, well, Josie dropped the ball.
Damn, Josie.
But I think it's good to do it in-house. I mean, David used to do these. We call them in-house podcasts or house cleaning podcasts, mm-hmm. where it's just the two hosts just kind of rapping, talking. So we have an outline. We have some questions that we're going to ask. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep it really light, really light. And so the first topic, just to keep things light, is the lies we tell ourselves when no one's watching.
But now people are watching.
Yeah. Well, that's what it's about. It's about bringing it out of the dark.
Okay.
And into the light. So, like, here are some of the angles for this. I'm fine. That's when you're obviously not.
Yeah.
I learned my lesson. But you didn't. Mm-hmm. I'm over that person, place, or thing. And you're not. How about, I don't need any help. And then this one, my wife likes to say this. I'm not petty. But you absolutely are.
Damn, she's not even mic'd up to defend herself.
I know, huh?
Low blow, Christian.
Yeah, I think like these are kind of the things that there are these blind spots that we have to ourselves and how we act and how we interact in the world. And we need community to help us, sometimes gently, sometimes not so gently,
yeah,
to let us see these blind spots of these lies that we tell ourselves. So what's one lie that you genuinely believed for way too long?
I mean, most recently, there was, you know, a period of, you know, almost a couple of years where I called myself a lesbian.
Oh. Oh, wow.
Turns out I was wrong.
I mean, you know, it's a spectrum, right?
No, it 100% is a spectrum, but I believe that one for a while.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it is. It's
nothing wrong with it, but once you bring home a boyfriend, you might not be a lesbian.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think that that's a spectrum, and
it can
shift and ebb and flow, and some people can identify that way for a long time, and then, you know,
then somebody changes it.
What? Everyone's looking off screen. Wow, that's good. So you came out the gate with just raw dog honesty. Wow.
That's such a fun analogy to have used for this particular one. Oh God, my family watches this.
Not anymore.
Disowned.
What's one lie that I genuinely believed for way too long? I don't know. I think there's a lot of lies I genuinely believe. I think one that I still struggle with time to time is that I'm too much. I'm too much.
I like that from Alice in Wonderland, the Mad Hatter talking to Alice, and he's like, oh, he's like, you lost your muchness. You used to be much, muchier.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that because that's the one that I struggle with. I've actually been struggling with that one a lot this week of just like, oh, I'm too much.
Yeah.
It's hard because that's like, that'll prevent, at least for me, it'll prevent me from reaching out for help. It'll prevent me from opening up to my friends. I'll withdraw from my friends and people who love me because I'm just like, I'm too much.
Yeah. Well, my thing is, what ends up happening is I manipulate myself. So I'm not who I really am because I don't want to be too much. And if I'm too much, then someone will reject me. Mm. And so what I would do for years is just manipulate who I am. Mm-hmm. So there was so much about who I am that was like not being revealed or shown or said, or the fact that I'm an emotional person, right? Just how I'm designed, emotions and intuitiveness is how I make decisions. It's how I know what I'm doing. And I think like, I didn't want that to be too much, too emotional. So mm-hmm. I would hide that. And then what would end up happening is it would come out as anger or resentment or just general saltiness. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was a lie. Yeah.
Yeah.
One lie that protected you until it started. Hey, how you doing? Welcome.
Our audience just grew.
Yes. Hi. You've been here before, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. A little minute, eh?
We got more Alcor in the house.
I know, isn't that interesting? I think everybody, pretty much almost everyone is from Woodstock, Ackworth, Kennesaw area. Oh, yeah. Who visits here? What's one lie that protected you until it started to destroy you?
I'm kidding. Ooh, protected me until it destroyed me. Honestly, I'm fine. Because then I didn't have to open up. And so then I'm not exposing myself to vulnerability. And so then you have nothing to judge me for. You have nothing to hold against me because you don't know me. But then, you know, that leads to isolation. And, you know, for addicts and alcoholics, isolation is, you know, typically not a good thing to have.
Well, I think it's like I'm fine at some level. Like sometimes I'm fine for me is helpful because I am emotional, right? And because I'm kind of led by that. Sometimes I need to just tell myself I'm fine. Like it's fine. Mm. Like just do the next thing. Mm. It's fine.
Just gaslight yourself.
gaslight yourself. Well, and then usually I take action, and once I take action, I realize, oh yeah, everything actually, it is fine. Mm-hmm. I am fine. I just needed to take some action.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's like a fine, it's an ebb and a flow, and there's a fine line between knowing when is the right moment to be like, no, I'm fine. I just need to move forward here. And when is the right time to express this internal condition that's going on mm-hmm. for me? So I think one lie that protected me until it started to destroy me. Wow. I don't know. I mean, I would say I'm fine. That's one, I think. I think most lies that I've said to myself were there to protect me.
Yeah.
I didn't steal that. I didn't take that. You know, I didn't steal that bag of weed. You know, to protect me. Or so I think most of my lies. Isn't that on a not you shirt? Not you shirt. It says lying seeks to protect. Isn't that what it is?
Pull up the Instagram right now.
What's the funniest, most delusional lie Past you told present you.
Past me told present me? What?
I don't know.
I can't speak to...
What's the funniest, most delusional lie that... I don't know if... I don't know. That's a good one. Honesty doesn't kill you, pretending does. Think that's true?
Honesty doesn't kill you, pretending does? I mean, you know, I think it definitely depends on the situation. But, yeah, for the most part. Because, I mean, there's definitely people, you know, their honesty did get them killed. But that's not for this show. But, yeah, I mean, honesty definitely opens the doors to new opportunities and potential freedoms. Whereas pretending, I mean, what are you going to get out of that other than, like, you know, manipulating the situation? But then that's not living authentically.
Yeah. We were I was at a group last night. We were talking about how sometimes, like, not everyone needs all the honesty.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's some people that I need to be really honest with about certain things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, your lawyer, your therapist, your doctor. Like, don't tell any lies there, for sure. Let them, the whole truth be out there. But then there's just sometimes, like, I think in my life, like, especially, like, in my relationship with my wife, you know, I guess it's kind of like this romantic version of what this relationship is supposed to be. And so that me and all of my complexities and all of my truths should be able to be expressed in this relationship at the fullest level.
Mm-hmm.
And I think maturing over time and then through mentorship with other people who have been married longer and have the same issues I have, like realizing that, like, all of me doesn't need to be presented all the time. You know what I'm saying? To one person. Mm-hmm. And to expect that one person can hold the complexities and all of my, all my contradictions,
mm-hmm.
you know? So, like, having mentors in my life, right? Friends in my life and professionals who I pay, you know, in my life allows me to kind of, like, sometimes it's like the same truth. It's just presented different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And in some instances I can fully let it out. And then in some cases it's more like it's not helpful to really be fully to expect that one person can hold all of that.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
No, absolutely. It reminds me, many years ago I had a friend who told me the difference between being honest and being transparent. And so you can be honest without giving it all up, you know, like being transparent is the whole kit and caboodle. But, you know, like, should I be honest at work? Absolutely. Should I be transparent at work? Probably not.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, one has a little bit of discretion into it, but it's not lying. Because it's like also like, oh, well, then where is, you know, lying by omission? It's like you're still being honest. You're still giving the whole truth, but it's like expecting one person to just be able to hold the weight of, like, I can't even bear the weight of my entirety, let alone somebody else. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, right.
God bless. Yeah.
Well, I think years ago somebody told me, like, that, you know, when you're wrong, promptly admit it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And they were like, it just means promptly admit it. It doesn't mean you need to go and say sorry right away to the person you offended.
Mm-hmm.
Because especially when we're just developing psychologically and spiritually, we're going to fuck up and have a lot of missteps, right?
Mm-hmm.
And say the wrong thing and be too emotional or overreact to a situation. And so coming back and going, oh, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, over and over again, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like an insult, adds insult to injury.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're wrong, promptly admit it. It's like having these relationships of good friends, good spiritual mentors who I can say when I'm wrong and I promptly admit it to one of them. The power of that is just as powerful, because then what I end up doing is changing my behavior or my knee-jerk reaction to situations, which will make it better for the person that I might be harming.
Mm-hmm.
That make Sounds like a cop out.
Well, no, because it's like, you know, I hate admitting when I'm wrong. So it's like, cool. I reacted too quickly and then I was wrong. And now I got to go tell this person that I was wrong. And that shit is embarrassing. So what do I do next time? Let me think before.
Right.
You know, I'm like, I don't want to keep admitting I'm wrong. That sucks.
Right. Yeah. Okay. The last thing to die and the first thing to rise again. It is what, audience? The last thing to die and the first thing to rise again.
Yeah.
Hey, voila, you read the paper.
Hell yeah, Ackworth.
No. Nice. Ackworth in the building. Is that your name, Ackworth?
No. Oh. That used to actually be one of my nicknames back in the day.
I bet it was. You little hood rat in the middle of Atlanta. Here's Ackworth coming down the road. In your Ford Escape or whatever you drove.
My Toyota 4Runner?
Don't
disrespect it.
So Brian brought this saying, which is the ego reinvents itself. That's kind of what this is saying.
Okay.
The ego reinvents itself.
The ego reinvents itself. So the last thing to die, the first thing to rise again.
Yeah, so when I first got sober and I'm in treatment and I'm having the ego death, realization that I've totally messed everything up and I want to quickly go back and fix everything again, right? And then I get out and I'm doing my treatment plan and going to the meetings and doing all the things I'm supposed to do. My ego reinvented itself as Mr. Recovery. And so what the ego's wanting to do is like have this, it wants control. It's the ego's there to like to protect me. It wants to help me. You know what I mean? It was there with me in high school. You know, that shit was weird, you know, and in middle school, that was even weirder. So my ego knows me better than anything and anyone. So my ego is always wanting to protect me and keep me safe. It's just because it's had all these experiences, it essentially thinks that the world is out to get me. Right. So it's going to reinvent itself in different mechanisms and different ways to try to regain control again, because it's a protection mechanism.
Yeah.
So what are some ways that your ego reinvented itself you first got clean and serene?
It's been happening my whole life. Because the way instead of defining it as my ego reinvented itself, because I've been talking about this a lot for the last couple weeks, like with my sponsor and mentors and stuff, is like every time like something will happen in my life and I won't want to look at it, whether it's something that happened to me, something that I caused, whatever. I'm like, no, I just shut down that version of myself and then create a new version.
Oh, yeah.
And so like that's like in high school, I went by a whole other name.
Like, oh, really?
I literally reinvented myself. And then, like, I, you know, but, like, only those people knew me by that name. And so then when I wasn't there, I was somebody else. And so like, there was Church Sarah, and then there was School Lizzie. Like, they didn't know Sarah. They knew Lizzie.
Where'd Lizzie come from?
My middle name is Elizabeth.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so
okay.
I went by Lizzie for a few years. All right. You know, those two different people. And, you know, so then, like, I started drinking and doing drugs, and that was my personality. And then I got sober, and then that was my personality. And then I relapsed, and then I don't have a problem. And that's my personality.
Right.
And it's just whatever it is, just constantly cut and run and reinvent.
Yeah. So what's preventing that from happening now?
Nothing. I
still doing it?
So, I mean, yeah, just now. Back to how I opened, like, realizing, like, no, like, it is still duality. It is a spectrum, and it's okay to be both and.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Still learning that one. It's hard.
I think that's the trick to this, is like accepting that your ego is going to reinvent itself. It's going to come back. You know, I've used the example probably on the show once before, and, you know, the horse and the carriage, right? And you have the driver of the carriage. It's that old school buggy, right? Horse and buggy.
Like the Wells Fargo logo.
Like the Wells Fargo. So you got the driver who's sitting on top. The driver's got the reins, and it's controlling. So when the driver pulls this way, the horse, and they go that way. Pulls that, pull back, stops, whips it, and they go faster. But usually the carriage is owned, or at least rented, by the rider, the person in the carriage, right? And so the person in the carriage can say, let's set the destination. We're going to grandma's house, okay? And then the driver's up there driving and the person inside kind of falls asleep. And so that person up top starts to think, well, I'm in control of this ride. Because obviously, when I pull the reins, we go where I say we go. And so when the driver maybe wakes up because the road's bumpy and the driver puts its head out the window and they see that they're not going to grandma's house and they're like, what the fuck? Where are we at? I didn't say to come. Why are we going here? Right? And so the person up top, that driver, is the ego. And true self, higher self, spirit self, whatever words you like to use for that version of human, is inside of the carriage. And that person falls asleep. And so this rider, driver, thinks that it's the one in charge. Mm-hmm. So there's a symbiotic relationship that needs to be happening here. Because you need the ego. And you need that part of yourself, right, to protect you in social situations, to let you know if there is a tiger coming or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. And it's when they are not in balance and in harmony, right? So, like, a lot of recovery is about you kill the ego, mm-hmm, and destroy the ego. But to me, that's an unrealistic aspiration, mm-hmm, because what will happen? Your ego will just reinvent itself, yeah, right? And so having the symbiotic relationship with our ego is a much healthier way. And so there's a level of acceptance that, yeah, my, mm-hmm, ego is going to, from time to time, be prickly. It's going to take the reins. It's going to try to get control. And from time to time, I'm going to have to reorient this, mm-hmm, and remind the ego that, hey, I love you. Thanks. Mm-hmm. You know, but we don't do that no more. We don't need to operate like that. And, yeah, having this symbiotic relationship with your ego and the acceptance of it, I think, is like a path to more freedom in life. At least that's been my,
yeah, case. Because, like, I've always struggled, like, when people go, your ego is not your amigo. And it's, yeah, like, but it's literally a part of me.
Right.
And it's like, don't I need to practice acceptance of who I am? And so, if I know my ego does this, you know, if my ego is still a part of me, don't I need to still learn to love it, learn to accept it, learn how to, you know, interact with it, you know, not let it, you know, because there's times where you, like, I feel like I've just sat idly by and just watched my ego do what it does, yeah, and not really done anything to be like, oh, maybe I should call somebody about this, you know, but, you know, being in situations where knowing, like, oh, this is where my ego is going to want to reinvent itself. So let me talk to people. Yeah. You know, like, being like, okay, like, no, like, we can be friends. We can get along. Like, what are you trying to do? What are you trying to tell me? What are you trying to protect me from?
Yeah.
And I think that's what I'm trying to learn right now, instead of just reinventing myself.
Yes. Right. Because the tension and the is you want to just kind of completely reinvent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because every time, like, I know that's the case whenever I have that feeling where I'm like, I just want to run away. I just want to run away. I don't want to do this. I want to run away. And then I'll reinvent myself in this, yeah, new land.
Yeah. Well, I can tell, like, you know, just in the last year that you've been a pretty consistent, your emotional state, the way you show up here, our phone conversations, you know, there's a consistency there that wasn't years prior.
Jesus Christ. I met you at a weird time in my life.
Yeah. But that's cool to see, right? Because that is, like, there's a level of self-acceptance and, you know, yeah. The other thing about my ego, what I notice is it doesn't, I mean, I can't, dude, every time I'm like, draw a line in the sand and I'm like, that ain't right. I'm not letting you treat me like that. Mm-hmm. Nah, this ain't. Every single time I've ever done that, I always end up finding out that I'm the asshole.
Mm-hmm.
There's like there's an easier, softer way, you know, and I never take that road. So anytime that I feel like I've drawn this line in sand, I'm like, no, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
I always tend to regret that.
Yep.
And I don't know why. Maybe that is what it is for those of us who are addicts, alcoholics. We just, you know, like, I had a sponsor who used to tell me he doesn't know where middle ground is. And it's the thing that he sees when he's doing a backflip.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, oh, there is middle ground right there. So not knowing where middle ground is, I will tend to always. Richard Rohr says that the ego, the spirit, right, or the true self,
mm-hmm,
right, the higher self, the divine self, cannot be offended. So anytime that you are offended, that it's your ego that's offended. So anytime you find yourself in this offended state, it's a sign to tell you that, oh, that's not real. Because if you, in fact, we are this higher self and this higher being that is connected to the thing in which turns planets and, you know, creates matter, then we wouldn't be offended. Does that track at all?
You had me until you were talking about the planets.
I'm just saying it's there's a thing going on, right? There's a deeper reality and truth to, and we tap into that
from time to time. Because I mean, it's important to look at, but like when something offends you, be like, why? Because like I even just had a situation where something, like I guess it did offend me, and it had nothing to do with what actually happened. It was just like it highlighted an area of insecurity I still have for like a past version of myself that I haven't forgiven or learned to love yet. And I was just like, damn, what a fun way to learn this. But then I still had to, you know, take action of the situation at hand. But it was really weird to look at it and be like, I'm offended, but not because you did something, but because of something about myself.
Yeah. There's a term in recovery. It says that when you are disturbed, it's you who is disturbed. Mm-hmm. Have you heard that?
Mm-hmm.
I hate that.
Oh, me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
But I think it's true. That my emotional state is really my own responsibility.
Yeah.
Okay. We are moving on. How's this going, guys? Is this going good? Yeah. No one's fallen asleep yet. Okay, it's good. You're not on your phone. Good. Leslie's tapping her toes. You good? We're doing all right? Yeah. All right. The spiritual glitch moments. Oh.
Spiritual glitch moments.
Moments that don't fit the boxes. Where science, faith, what the heck just happened, overlap. Dreams that feel like instructions. Coincidences that were too loud to ignore. Moments where you felt guided, warned, or protected. Times you felt watched. In a good way.
I don't know about that. There's a lot of times I thought I was being watched.
And it wasn't in a good way.
Definitely not. It was the tree police every time.
How does that show up for you? Do you get any of these kind of things? Premonitions or glimpses into some deeper truth or something?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to like recall a specific moment on the spot. But there's definitely times where it's like,
well, when we pull cards out in front, we used to do that, right? That was always kind of weird, right? How it would be eerily on point.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, if you're willing to tap in, like more will be revealed, right?
Mm-hmm.
But because there's definitely been times where like I feel like I know like I'm supposed to do this and I can't give, like, okay, there was this one time at church camp. I was thinking, like, I woke up and like this person I had recently met was like super on my mind, and I was like, that's so weird. And like, and I had a dream, so it was in my dream this person was like super struggling and like not doing well and like was like opening up to me and like reaching out for help. I'm like, that's crazy, like I just met this person. And so the next time I saw them, I was like, hey, like, how are you? How did this retreat thing go that you were on? Because like I had this dream, and then he was like, oh my God, it was terrible. Here's what happened. And like, he just like opened up to me with some insecurities he was dealing with that this group of people really highlighted and capitalized on with him. And I was just like, whoa, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So there's times like that. So like whenever I'm like randomly thinking about somebody, sometimes I get like spooked because I'm like, because I definitely had that, like an old teacher of mine. I was thinking about her more recently and I reached out to her and I was like, hey, like, how are you? Like, she was like a mentor of mine for a while. And she was like, oh, hey, like I'm going through chemo right now. I'm like, all right, cool, cool, cool. So I don't like randomly thinking about people because then it makes me scared.
right. Yes.
But there's times like that where it's like, oh, maybe I should reach out to this person.
Yeah.
And there's usually been something there. I don't know. More will be revealed.
Yeah, I kind of have a rule where if somebody pops into my mind randomly three times. The first time I'm like, I have an overactive mind. I think about everybody and everything all the time. The second time is like, yeah, you know, I have an overactive mind, whatever. Mm-hmm. But by the third time, if someone has popped up and it's within a day or so, that's when I'll just be like, I'll call them and I'll call them and I'll just check on them. Mm-hmm. I can't say that every time. There have been times when I've checked in and it's been like, oh my God, like, how did you know to call me? Mm-hmm. You know? And then there's been times when I call people and I go, yeah, you popped in my head. They're like, well, that's fucking weird. Why are you calling me? You know? Because you never know, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's been instances in my life, not as often as I'd like, but there's been instances when like someone has reached out to me right at the right time. Mm-hmm. Or when I'm in a really terrible spot and I've reached out to somebody who I don't talk to regularly and they happen to be right, really responsive, yeah, with the right words and the right things, yep, to say. Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember there was one time like I got home and I just sat in my car and I just cried. And I don't remember what was going on, but I just was not feeling good. And I got a call from a friend who like doesn't normally call me first. And I was just like, I answered and I was like, hey, like, what's up? Like, are you okay? And he was like, yeah, I just felt like I should reach out to you right now. And I'm like, cool, cool. I'm like, so I'm crying. And he was like, well, what's going on? And it was cool to like, you know, have someone to take that. He wasn't someone that I could talk to about what was going on, but it was cool to be like, okay, like somebody thought of me, they reached out, like I'm not alone, like I feel alone right now, but I'm not alone.
Yeah.
So like I can cry on the phone with somebody and not just, yeah, by myself in my car while the guy's like delivering the mail. Like that's definitely, right, the mailman has definitely caught me crying in my car way too many times. Like that's a special kind of low.
He's like wants a new route. That's weird and funny.
Oh, thanks for judging me.
That the mailman.
That's weird.
That's weird and funny that the mailman has caught you crying in your car way too many times.
Well, it's like,
That's like the setup of a sitcom episode.
Well, like, I was working part-time at the time, so when I would get home, it was usually about the time the mail would be delivered, and I, yeah, would get home and just cry.
It wasn't the... Yes, okay. You were just crying that much. That's what it is.
Yes.
That's what it was. Yeah.
Yes, I was just crying, yeah, a lot.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. This is popping in my head. Like, did you ever see the movie Noah with Russell Crowe?
Yo, yes. Oh, my God.
So, in that movie... The way Noah gets the revelation is through dream. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I watched it, I thought, wow, that is brilliant. Like that, it's like felt very honest depiction of that, right? Him giving this revelation and hearing from the Lord, right? And I remember that there was a lot of controversy around, mm-hmm, that movie because of that,
yeah,
right? And I don't know. I thought you get dreams and you call somebody and there's some truth there. And I don't know why that reminded me of that movie.
Yeah, I remember. I actually remember that distinctly, seeing that in theaters and like on the poster it said inspired by. And so that's like, because, you know, I get caught up on semantics sometimes. And I'm like, well, if y'all could just read, it said inspired by, not based on.
Right. Yeah. Okay. A moment when you knew you weren't alone. I will say this. For me, personally, spirituality became real when I stopped trying to make it extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Once I let go of trying to manifest spooky coincidences and I just let it be, again, another friend who said that there's a natural pull to God. Mm-hmm. And it's not hard. There's a natural thing going on there. And just that little bit of nugget of truth, like, started opening me up to where spirituality became much more. What really would fuck me up was like, it was almost like spirituality was presented as these two separate realities. Mm. So there's a spiritual, and you dip in your toe into the spiritual, and then you come back into the physical, mm-hmm, right? And I don't know, it just didn't seem true, right? Like there was something wrong with that, of this, because then I felt like I was kind of battling these two existences, you know? And it was through some of Richard Rohr's teaching where he talks about in the seven unorthodox or alternative orthodoxies. Richard Rohr's seven alternative orthodoxies. And it's where he says, may the force be with you. No, that's not what he says. But he says there's one reality, mm-hmm. right? And that it all exists in the one reality. And it's kind of akin to spectrums of light, right? Like there's like nine types of light in this room right now. Mm-hmm. You and I are only seeing, and all y'all, we're only seeing a certain amount of those spectrums of light. But there, if you have the right eyes, you can see all the other spectrums, the infrared and all the other, I don't know what they all are, but I know that there's a lot of them and we only see a few of them. Mm-hmm. To me, that's what it is. And when I kind of turned that gem on spirituality, it helped me to kind of live it in a more real way. Mm-hmm. Because I never got those burning bushes or those like really spooky coincidental things that my friends would get. And then I would think, how much of that is really real too? Like how much of that is just you manifesting that because you want to have this like mm-hmm. super special, you want to be special.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And I think for me, like when spirituality, like also like it didn't need to be like this complex thing. Like before I got sober this time, I really just wanted spirituality to be all I needed. Like I didn't want a community of sober people. I didn't want to have to go to anything. Like I just me alone in my room burning some sage. I wanted that to be enough, you know? Yeah. and I was like learning, like I was like looking up all this stuff, like the different types of just different spiritual paths that were out there, you know? And I was like, one of these is going to work. One of these is going to stick and I'm going to stay sober. And you know what? Didn't work for me. I do know people it has worked for. I was just not one of them.
Yeah.
And, but then like, I felt so intimidated by any kind of spiritual path. Cause I was like, I'm going to do it wrong. Mm. You know, I'm like, I'm going to offend God. I'm going to offend whatever being that might be there.
Right.
And then what really flipped for me was when my second engagement failed and I was like, okay, cool. What now? And I just remember, I looked up at the moon that night. There was none. And so I looked up the moon phases. It was a new moon and I got sober on a new moon. And I remember I had a friend who pointed that out and he was like, energetically, this is a great day to get sober. It's a new moon, new beginning, set your intention. I was like, oh, cool. And so then my engagement failed on a new moon. I'm like, okay, new beginning, set my intention.
Yeah.
Cool. And then I looked back at my life and was like seeing like how many things happened on a new moon. I'm like, that's spooky.
Right.
And I'm like, maybe the moon's kind of cool. And so like, it just, I would look up and see a full moon and I would be like, okay, cool. Like, I see you. That's cool. And I don't know, from then on, like spirituality just started like being more normal. I could just see it without having to like seek it out. I could just look up. There it is. Or I could look at the trees. There it is.
Yeah.
And like that makes me feel not alone, just being with nature.
Yeah. I feel like I want to go on a whole rant about Jesus, but I'm not going to.
Some of our viewers might thank you.
Let me just say, I will say one thing. Just say one thing. I mean, you know, the idea of something being completely divine and completely human, mm-hmm. inhabiting the same space and time and matter, should be enough for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years of religion to maybe not demonize the here and now. And to maybe embrace it as a benevolent universe. Mm. That, I think, was the beginning of kind of that crumbling of this, like, it's like this when we get to heaven. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, but shit's fucked up now, dog. Like, you're just gonna wait? Mm-hmm. You're just gonna tithe and show up on Sunday and wait? And so that's it.
He just unlocks some childhood memories for me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because I just remember growing up and the pastor crying from the pulpit wanting to die so bad so he could go to heaven.
That's someone called 988. Someone called 988.
Literally, like, he starved himself for a few months. It's not funny. But he, like, fasted. Oh. And he's like, I'm not going to eat until every member of this congregation is on fire for Jesus. And so no I. Pressure.
Everyone's just faking it at this point.
No, I was like, well, I'm not raising my hand. Give this guy a piece of bread. I was playing chicken with him. But, like, he, you know, he fudged a little bit. Like, he would, like, make chicken smoothies.
Ooh.
So he could just drink that. It was a whole thing. But yeah, it was like that. And he would just cry from the pulpit, just wanting to go to heaven so bad. And that was just like a normal thing of just like, there is no here and now. It's just.
Well, it's weird because it's literally in the book, right? That he would have been reading out of.
He wasn't reading out of that book, I promise.
And
you.
The Apostle Paul writes that I have it tattooed on my neck. To live is Christ, to die is gain. It's the duality of it, you know, the yin and the yang of it. You need both. And so to discredit the here and now and the material world in which we exist in this earth suit kind of thing.
Earth suit.
Yeah.
I love that.
I know. So churchy.
New t-shirt.
Yeah.
Earth suit.
Earth suit. This is my suit for my earth suit. My earth suit cover.
Yeah.
Or you could just have a shirt that says, this covers my nipple clamps.
wear that to the family reunion.
That would be way better than one that just had the nipples cut out.
The Regina George. Wait, no. That shirt, this covers the nipple clamps. Have the circles cut out.
That's brilliant. Yes. That way, everyone's offended. No one's left out of this offense. Everyone. All right. The unfinished parts of ourselves. How are we doing on time? Oh, we're good. Okay, good. Where people pretend they're healed, but yikes.
The first 3 years of my sobriety.
Yeah. That reminds me of like spiritual bypass. You ever heard that?
No.
Where, well, it's kind of on the same topic, but it's like, they want to use spirituality to bypass, like you wanted to just use spirituality to get through it and be better, not face yourself, not go through a proven set of instructions that in which you can face who you are and grow and learn and become who you really are, right? So you want to spiritually bypass that by just going, you know, God did. You know what I mean? Like, God did. I don't need to do none of that.
The white light.
Yeah.
Okay.
People pretend they're healed. I've seen that a lot. Mm-hmm. I've seen it a lot. I see it a lot with people who kind of like, you know, I'm not going to really do like meetings and that whole thing. I'm just going to rock with God. Just being God.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you know, just my experience, I haven't seen that pan out very well, you know? So let's see, what are some traits that you thought would be gone by now?
Ooh. Definitely thought, my people pleaser would be a lot quieter. Right now.
Yeah.
And she's not.
Uh-huh.
The conflict avoidantness, thought that would be gone. Nope. Some things are just here.
Yeah.
And loud.
Yeah. I think I would have thought I'd stop being a little bitch by now. You know, sometimes I can be a little bitch.
Are you a little bitch?
I can be a little bit.
His wife is nodding.
This one didn't any nod. That was a yes. Yes, he's a little bitch. I can be. Yeah. I thought that would be gone. The habits you upgraded instead of removed. The wounds that only show up when you're tired.
Jesus. That one? No. I don't know. I mean, when I'm tired is when my accent comes out, so.
What accent? Which one?
Which one? Just the Ackworth. No. Yeah, just the little country, the country shit.
I remember being a kid and crying, and I think I was crying about a girl, probably. And I think my mom was like, you just need to go to bed. You're tired. And yeah, when I'm tired, I'm a little more emotional. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, yeah, it's just like, I need to go to sleep.
Oh, yeah, because that's
like, I'm just like, way too tripping right now.
Yeah, like when I'm really tired and then I'm like, nobody loves me.
Yeah.
I'm all alone. Right. Everybody hates me. I'm like, too much.
No, you just need a nap.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I love that. I have a pastor friend who's like, did you hear from God or did you just eat Doritos before you went to bed? You know? Is this, you just need a sandwich and a nap, right? Mm. What's something you're oddly good at that people wouldn't think you would be good at?
I'm trying to think.
Maybe you're not embarrassed about it.
I don't know. I feel put on the spot.
I'm a good cook.
Well,
I'm a really good cook. I don't know if people would know that.
I don't know. I feel like I've always known that about you, so I don't know.
I mean, you guys all know, but I'm a freaking fantastic lyricist. That always, depending on the crowd, that'll really throw people.
That's fair. I do love when I text you, like when I'm like going through something and you send me back a freestyle video.
Yeah. Yeah. We all have our ways of coping.
It's just like, Jesus yeah. Christ.
Or I send a random video of me dancing, you know, just to let you know, like, we're all going right. through it.
I'm oddly good at twerking.
Everyone looked over there.
Yeah, that's like a thing I'm known for.
Katie's yelling, it's true.
No, it was Sarah.
Oh, it was Sarah. What petty hill will you die on?
Petty hill will I die on? A lot of them. What's a good one, though?
Accuracy. What? Like if I'm in an argument and someone's not being accurate or not accurately understanding what I'm saying, I will die. I will get stuck there.
Mm.
Yeah. Accuracy.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I guess in the same vein, for me, grammar kills me.
Oh.
Like when, like that's why like I hate like when I'm like typing something and I'm pissed and then I have a grammar mistake. I'm like, oh, fuck, I just unraveled my entire argument. Because when someone's texting me, and it could be about anything. Like I love when someone texts me to brag about something that they did and there's a grammar mistake in it.
That's petty.
I'm just like, hey.
Yeah. I just graduated from treatment. And you're like, you mean graduated, comma, from treatment.
Yeah, see, that's where I would get you because there shouldn't be a comma
I know,
there.
I know. Just using an example.
No, yeah, that's one, like, because I know it's stupid because it's like, it literally doesn't matter. You still communicated effectively enough for me to know what you're talking about. But, like, yeah, you didn't use a comma where there should be one or you did and there shouldn't.
Yeah.
Idiot.
They're dead, Sarah.
Wrong there.
I can't believe they're gone. Wrong there. What's the most backhanded compliment someone gave you that actually was true?
Oh, there was one. What was it? I don't know. I have five brothers. Like, there's probably a lot of those.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We used to do backhanded compliments because when we were in a band in L.A. and all of our friends, and you would get a lot of backhanded compliments in L.A. It's like a very L.A. thing to do, which is like, oh, wow, you guys were actually really good tonight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, oh, that's weird. So we're not usually good or, you know, or you guys were way better than I expected you to be, you know, like so we used to. That used to be like a running joke of backhanded compliments.
I accidentally give those a lot. Like when I tell someone like, oh, you look so cute tonight. I'm like, ah. I'm like, but you look cute regularly, but just extra so tonight.
Right. You're trying to clean it up.
Yeah.
That's your people pleaser.
Fuck, that sounded so mean.
Right. Okay. As we're kind of landing the plane here on what I hope is a helpful podcast to someone, you know, one thing that we're still learning the hard way. I would say the one thing I'm still learning the hard way is I don't always have an accurate view of reality.
So your petty hill is also what you're learning the hard way.
Yeah, that's why I can't die on these petty hills, because I'm obviously I'm like the wrong version of reality. Sometimes I'll read into situations, mm-hmm. and it's such an automatic subconscious thing that I'm still learning that the hard way. Mm-hmm. And usually it's interpersonal relationships, yeah. is where it's the most common.
I think interpersonal relationships is the same area where I'm still learning things the hard way. But like right now it's kind of cool to see where there's growth in that area that I didn't think, because it's like, you know, like when you're like anxious, right? And you're like, oh, like everybody hates me. And it's like, oh, I could just text somebody for validation real quick. Be like, hey, this is what my brain is telling mm-hmm. me. But being able to do that on my own, being like, no, like I don't have any evidence that everybody actually hates me. I don't have any evidence that this anxious narrative in my head is what's actually going on. And I don't need somebody to tell me that. But it's still like with interpersonal relationships, being like, setting boundaries, communicating the boundaries,
lowered expectations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I still get bit by mismanaged expectations.
I'll add this, which is like, I think one thing that, has been hard to learn, but very freeing is, I pretty much get what I want, and I'm pretty much most of the situations that I'm in, I've been the maker of that situation. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, invariably, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, and at first, it was kind of like, oh, you know, here we go again. You know, but really embracing that, kind of looking back and tracking, like, if I'm in a particular situation, which I have been, and I go, I don't really like this, but I can look back and go, but I kind of put myself right here. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, it's not a self-deprecating, woe is me kind of thing, but it's an ownership of like my own decisions have got me to this place. Mm-hmm. And it's freeing because it helps me to go, okay, then how can I learn for what decisions to make moving forward, mm-hmm. So that I don't put myself back in this spot.
And actually learn the lesson.
Yes. I usually don't learn until there's blood dripping down my forehead. Then I'm like, oh, that's the problem.
Yeah, there's usually blood involved when I'm learning my lessons too.
So, Sarah, I love you. I'm so grateful for you and for all you do for this show and the ministry. And grateful for everyone being here. Even Taylor, that even though she's been on her phone the whole time, anxiously scrolling.
Damn it, Taylor.
Oh.
What were we talking about, Taylor?
Mm-hmm. So I want to thank all the donors and supporters, the interns for driving through the traffic to get over here each and every day, Andrew for moving here from Atlanta, and
from Michigan
to Atlanta. Did I say two?
I said from.
Hey, you know, it's all one reality, so you know.
I don't know. I'm
whatever.
Just like really stuck on the accuracy.
You know who's petty? Fucking Andrew's petty.
I know.
Good Lord.
I know.
He will not let a thing go.
I know.
I'm guarantee you on Tuesday I'm hearing about how he moved from Atlanta. I guarantee you. See? Yeah, so this has been another episode of The Most High Show. And if you need help, reach out, because I think you'd be surprised how many of us would actually really understand where you're at. So,
oh, yeah.
End scene. Thank you.